Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Friday, July 16th, Pope Francis releases a motu proprio on the use of Roman liturgy prior to 1970. The Pope also expresses his closeness to all those affected by devastating floods in Germany, Belgium and the Netherlands. And the United Nations says that the death in custody of Indian Catholic priest Stan Swamy will forever remain a stain on India's human rights record. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo. Pope Francis issued a motu proprio on Friday regarding the use of the Roman liturgy prior to 1970, modifying the norms that regulate the use of the 1962 missal granted 14 years ago by his predecessor, Pope Benedict XVI. It bears a Latin title, Traditionis Custodes, Guardians of the Tradition, and comes into force immediately. The decree is accompanied by a letter in which he explains that his decision to promulgate the new law follows consultations with bishops throughout the world. It requires individual bishops to approve celebrations of the ancient Mass, also called the Tridentine Mass, and requires newly ordained priests to receive explicit permission to celebrate it from their bishops in consultation with the Vatican. Under the new law, bishops must also determine if the current groups of faithful attached to the old Mass accept the reforms of the Second Vatican Council. These groups, the Pope said, can no longer use regular parishes for their Masses. Instead, bishops must find an alternate location for them. In addition, he said bishops are no longer allowed to authorize the formation of any new pro-Latin Mass groups in their dioceses. The Pope explained he was taking action to promote unity and heal divisions within the Church. On Thursday evening, a telegram was sent through the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Parolin, to the President of the Federal Republic of Germany, Franz-Walter Steinmeier. The telegram says Pope Francis was deeply affected on learning the news of the severe storm and floods in North Rhine-Westphalia and Rhineland-Palatinate. It continued saying he is remembering in prayer the people who have lost their lives and is especially praying for the people who are still missing, for the wounded, as well as for those whose property has been damaged or destroyed due to the power of nature. At least 120 people are confirmed dead, and as many as 1,300 people remain missing as devastating floods hit Germany, Belgium and the Netherlands. Most victims were reported in Germany, as Stefan Boss reports.
Record rainfall has caused rivers to burst their banks, devastating parts here in the Netherlands and neighbouring Belgium as well as Germany. Throughout the region, heavy flooding caused by days of rainfall turned streams and streets into raging torrents, sweeping away cars and causing some buildings to collapse. Hospitals, care centers and hospices were among those sites being evacuated. For many, help has come too late, however. Across the border in Germany, more than 100 people died in devastating flooding. German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier said he was stunned by the devastation. He pledged support to the families of those killed and to cities and towns facing significant damage. Steinmeier said that in this hour of need, the country stands together and that it was essential to show solidarity for those from whom the flood has taken everything. Authorities in the German state of Rhineland-Palatinate said 60 people had died there, including at least 9 residents of an assisted living facility for people with disabilities. In neighboring North Rhine-Westphalia state, officials put the death toll to more than 40, but warned that the figure could rise further. Rescuers were rushing Friday to help people trapped in their homes in the town of Erftstadt, southwest of Cologne. Regional authorities said several people had died after their houses collapsed due to subsidence, and aerial pictures showed what appeared to be a massive sinkhole. Authorities said already late Thursday that about 1,300 people in Germany were still listed missing. They cautioned that the figure could be due to duplication of data and difficulties reaching people because of disrupted roads and phone connections. For Vatican Radio, I am Stefan Bos.
Some of the Colombian mercenaries were known and willing members of a plot to assassinate Haiti's president Jovenel Moise before pulling their triggers and gunning him down dead with 12 shots, while others were left in the dark about the real awful nature of murderous mission. James Blears reports.
Colombia's President Iván Duque says most of the 26 ex-Colombian soldiers, some of whom received special forces training in the United States, didn't know they were already part of a cold and calculating plot to assassinate Haiti's President Jovenel Moïse. But there was also a small hard core of them who knew full well that President Moïse was marked for murder. President Duque says the majority believed they'd been recruited to work as bodyguards. Two of the 28 of the motley crew were Haitian Americans and the holders of U.S. passports. The U.S. Department of Defense confirms that some of these Colombians, not specifically revealing just how many, were still on active duty in the Colombian military when they received specialist training on U.S. soil. Haitian authorities are still questioning 63-year-old Dr. Christian Emmanuel Sanon, a Haitian living in Miami who flew into Haiti in June on a private jet. They describe him as a key witness, but they're still seeking who they call the plot's mastermind and have yet to name him. The uniformed men posing as DEA agents broke their way into President Moise's Port-au-Prince home, shooting him dead with 12 bullets at almost point-blank range and gravely wounding First Lady Martine Moise with multiple gunshot wounds. In a video released, one of them shouts in English, "DEA operation, everyone stay down." None of President Moise's so-called bodyguards were injured, as a firefight with them never developed, and they're all under investigation. For Vatican Radio, James Blears reporting.
Lebanon's Prime Minister-designate Saad Hariri has resigned 9 months after he was named to the post by Parliament. Linda Bordoni reports.
Pope Francis has repeatedly appealed for prayers and international aid for Lebanon as its people and the millions of mostly Syrian refugees it hosts bear the brunt of what the World Bank describes as one of the worst economic crises in 150 years. Saad Hariri cited key differences with the country's president, Michel Aoun, resulting in political and legislative paralysis when he announced his decision to quit on Thursday evening. The country's deep-rooted political crisis has left the Lebanese without a government for 9 months, even as they endure an unprecedented economic meltdown, spiraling inflation and unemployment. Analysts say that with no clear candidate to replace Hariri, Lebanon is likely to slide deeper into chaos as prospects for forming a government to undertake desperately needed reforms and talks for a recovery package with the International Monetary Fund are now even more remote. The Lebanese pound has lost more than 90% of its value and poverty has soared in the past several months. Dire shortages of medicines, fuel and electricity have repeatedly led tens of thousands of protesters into the streets. And again today at the news of the Prime Minister's resignation. Lebanon has a deeply divided sectarian-based political system and Hariri, who is one of its most prominent Sunni Muslim leaders, told the media he has no intention of endorsing a replacement. Observers agree the implementation of substantial reforms is the priority, but so far efforts have been blocked by a power struggle between Hariri on one side and Aoun and his son-in-law Gebran Bassil, who heads the largest bloc in parliament, on the other. As each side blames each other for the deadlock within the shadow of regional and international interests and alliances involving the US, France, Iran and Saudi Arabia, the disintegration of the land of milk and honey has led to over 55% of its population living below the poverty line. I'm Linda Bordoni.
Shortfalls in global routine vaccination efforts due to the COVID-19 pandemic have moved the WHO and the UN's Children's Fund to raise concerns about the growing risk of the resurgence of vaccine-preventable childhood illnesses. Father Benedict Mayaki has more.
An estimated 23 million children missed out on basic vaccines through routine immunization services last year, a figure representing 3.7 million more than in 2018, says UNICEF and the World Health Organization. Many of these children, up to 17 million, likely did not receive any vaccine throughout the year, resulting in the exacerbation of already present inequalities in access to vaccines. More so, a significant number of the children live in areas affected by conflict, in underserved remote communities, or in places where there is limited access to basic health and social services. According to the latest data published by the international organizations on Thursday, these concerning statistics are largely due to global service disruptions due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The report said that in 2020, immunization services in many areas experienced disruptions, with the Southeast Asian and Eastern Mediterranean regions most affected. Moreover, as access to health services and immunization outreach were hampered due to the pandemic, the numbers of children not receiving even their first vaccinations increased globally. In fact, when compared to 2019, 3.5 million more children missed their first dose of diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis vaccine, while 3 million more children missed their first measles dose. WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus noted that even as countries clamor to get their hands on COVID-19 vaccines, the world has gone backwards on other vaccinations, leaving children at risk from devastating but preventable diseases like measles, polio, or meningitis. He further said that multiple disease outbreaks will be catastrophic for communities and health systems already battling COVID-19, making it more urgent than ever to invest in childhood vaccination and ensure that every child is reached. In the same vein, UNICEF Executive Director Henrietta Fore stressed that the evidence should be a clear warning that the COVID-19 pandemic and related disruptions have cost us valuable ground that we cannot afford to lose, and the consequences will be paid in the lives and well-being of the most vulnerable. To combat the situation and work to recover lost ground due to disruptions, the international agencies recommend the restoration of vaccine campaigns and services so that countries can safely deliver routine immunization during the pandemic. I'm Father Benedict Mayaki.
And finally, the death in custody of Indian Catholic priest Stan Swamy, a renowned human rights and social justice advocate for over four decades, will forever remain a stain on India's human rights record, said the United Nations on Thursday. Robin Gomes has the details.
Mary Lawler, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders, said she was devastated to hear that Father Stan, a Jesuit priest who had dedicated much of his life to defending the rights of indigenous peoples and the Adivasi minority, died in custody on July the 5th, despite many requests for his release as his health deteriorated in prison. The ailing priest, who belonged to the Jamshedpur Jesuit province, was arrested amid the COVID-19 pandemic on October the 8th from Bagaicha, a Jesuit social action center he founded on the outskirts of Ranchi, the capital of eastern India's Jharkhand state. He was charged for alleged links with Maoist insurgents who were said to have been behind the violence in Bhima Koregaon village in the western state of Maharashtra in January 2018. Arrested by the National Investigation Agency that is tasked with fighting terrorism and sedition under the controversial Unlawful Activities Prevention Act, UAPA, Father Swamy was lodged in Taloja Central Jail near Mumbai, the capital of Maharashtra, the following day. Father Swamy has denied all charges against him, saying he has never been to Bhima Koregaon in all his life. He became India's oldest prison charged with terrorism to die in custody, bail denied. In her press release, Lola recalled that in early November 2020, UN experts had joined her in raising his case with the Indian authorities, reminding them of their international human rights obligations. Lola asked why he wasn't released and why he had to die in custody. There is no excuse ever for a human rights defender to be smeared as a terrorist, and no reason they should ever die the way Father Swamy died, accused and detained and denied his rights, Lola stressed. The human rights expert said Father Swamy had been working for decades to protect the rights of Adivasi and Dalit minority communities, in particular violations involving forced displacement and illegal land acquisitions. I am Robin Gomes.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, we invite you to visit our web portal at www.vaticannews.va. You can also follow us on Vatican News English section Facebook page and Twitter accounts. Many thanks go to Joe Mauriello in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo.